very busy. Many important matters require a king's attention.
I'm king now. King, 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 king now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again when I am
turn. Your fingers or your
king doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plan.
He's one,
but girls.
Your fingers or your tongue.
I am
the king. I'm telling mother.
Oh. Welcome to the Joffria Podcast. My name's Bubba, and with me, as always, is Catfish. Catfish, how you doing?
I'm doing better than Oberyn Martell.
I look...
Spoiler alert.
Right, I look about as well as he looks right now. It's been a rough weekend. Welcome, everybody, to the Joffria Podcast. If you're a brand new listener, welcome aboard. What took you so long? We are the only podcast, Catfish. There are a lot of podcasts out there dedicated to HBO's Game of Thrones. There are a lot of podcasts out there dedicated to George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire saga.
They're missing something very important.
Yeah, what is that they're missing, Catfish?
Well, you can't talk about the creation of the United States of America
right. And
totally ignore George Washington. And I feel like that's what's been happening here.
Yeah, other podcasts have not been talking about the greatest character in the history of television and literature.
And that's real life.
And real life. And that's what our podcast is about. It's about King Joffrey Baratheon. First
yes.
in his name, first in your heart. And he is, without a doubt, really what we're about. Even if the show wants you to keep believing that he's dead. Aha, the show trying to trick us. Just like it tried to trick us to make us think that Oberyn would win, it tried to trick us to make us think that Joffrey was still dead.
Let me say this, and I know...
I'm going to let you say it one time.
I don't want to spoil anything,
right.
But there are some people on this show who have died multiple times and have come back.
Right.
It's possible in this world. People might be saying, it's ridiculous. How could Joffrey come back? Well, we know somebody who's come back from death no less than seven times.
I think it was only six, actually. Beric.
Then it was less than seven times.
No less. No less. It means less than. So, Catfish, that's the only spoiler. We're going to let you know so you're not heartbroken that King Joffrey will come back. But otherwise, we're not going to talk about spoilers from the book series. We're going to stick
Correct.
Strictly to the show. And today, we're going to go over this week's episode of the HBO television show, which was titled The Mountain and the Viper, Catfish.
Now, let me say something else, though.
I will allow you to say this as
it's
well.
It's only the other thing.
Okay.
We have been in some of our previous podcasts, which
our
I
double
encourage
P's?
You to double P's,
previous
podcasts,
podcast, yes.
Have read some chapters of the books that have been totally different in the show.
Right. Mainly because we're the Joffrey podcast and we've read the Joffrey POV chapters from
right.
the books. But tonight, after we review this great episode of the television show, we're actually going to do something we've never done before, Catfish.
What is that?
We're going to read a POV chapter from a non-Joffrey character.
Right.
We are going to read...
That is.
We are going to read a POV chapter from evil Uncle Tyrion's perspective, and it had to do with this fight between the Red Viper and the Mountain, which the show covered. And so...
But not correctly.
Not correctly. So we're going to read that chapter to you. Folks, don't worry. There won't be spoilers because you just saw it happen on the show. But it does happen slightly different in the book. So at the end of our episode review, we're going to jump in and we're going to do that.
Great.
But first, Catfish, before we even talk about this episode, as we always mention, we're doing this show for King Joffrey. He's the only listener we care about. But we do have some listeners who also love Joffrey, and so we like to announce them right at the top.
Absolutely.
So King Joffrey knows who these great listeners are. And we know if you're a great listener.
How do we know that?
Well, a couple ways. Number one is if you follow us on Twitter. So it's been 2 weeks since the last episode of Game of Thrones, Catfish, and we have a lot of new Twitter followers.
We do.
Let's just read them off real quick. The my favorite here is something called Game of Retweets. And
yes.
So thank you very much, Game of Retweets. We also have Jack Milichak, who's at Y-Town Jack on Twitter. We have Rick Kosmalski. I mispronounce these names terribly.
All the time.
We have Ceaseless, Jacob Lambert, Brown Bum. Now, a lot of people are wondering when Brown Ben, a character from books, might appear on the show, but this is Brown Bum following.
Nice.
We have Joey, who's at JVHM2012, Scott Newcomb, Ranker of Thrones, Ryan Colburn, Amy Steck, Jeff, who's at Jeff, spelled J-E-P-H, Piro. We have Chris Drinkwater, Lee Feisch, Tie Man.
That's everybody. Everybody who followed you followed me this week.
So if you're wondering who are good people to follow on Twitter, listeners, you can follow any of these people because they know that Joffrey is the best.
We know they know the time.
Now, Catfish, what we've been doing for what feels like months is we've been giving away these wonderful The Joffrey Podcast t-shirts to fans who don't follow us on Twitter but go the extra step.
And if anyone wants to know what they look like, a good way to tell is to go to iTunes, search for Joffrey Podcast in the podcast, and when you see it, that's the beautiful picture. It is Joffrey.
It's a different picture.
It's a different picture than that one. Can I just say one more thing?
Okay,
it's not that picture.
Okay, very good.
It's a beautiful... I thought it was... It's definitely my...
Yes, it's your Twitter picture.
It's my Twitter picture. Right. It's Joffrey against an American flag.
The greatest American hero, believe it or not, is Joffrey. To win these t-shirts, all you have to do is go to the iTunes store, where maybe you're downloading this podcast, and leave a written review and submit it. Just leaving stars is sadly not good enough for a t-shirt.
I will say this.
This be correct?
This will be the fourth.
Will this be correct? This thing you're going to say, unlike the whole, what the t-shirt
is,
looks like.
This is the point of, this is my point of view.
Let's hear it.
We have the greatest fans.
We do.
Just
you
because,
are great.
Because
almost
they're the
as
fans
great as
who are care about Joffrey.
Right.
And every single review we've gotten has been a 5-star review.
Right.
They don't need to be 5-star
reviews.
They
don't have to be.
They can be 1-star reviews. You can
they
say,
could be.
I hate this the way I hate evil Uncle Tyrion.
Right. Do you think that they're really giving Joffrey 5 stars?
That's
and
probably
that it's
what it
the
is.
Podcaster, like,
That's
I can
it
love
is.
It or leave it.
You can give Joffrey the 5 stars, and then underneath you can actually say, I really give this podcast 4.5 stars.
Right, exactly. All right, so real quick, I'm going to jump in and read the two new reviews we got, the two new iTunes reviews we got in the U.S. iTunes store.
U.S.?
Yes.
Why do you say that like that's that like we only that you're saying we there's more people than in the U.S. that watch and download our show?
Yes, and then Catfish, why don't you read the two new reviews we got in what the iTunes calls the United Kingdom's iTunes store.
Oh, okay.
So we got 4 new reviews, 2 in the U.S., 2 in the U.K.
And one of
Canada
these people...
and Australia. We need you to come through.
Yeah,
so we
what
need
happened?
Some more reviews, Canada and Australia. We love those two wonderful kingdoms of Joffrey.
So now wait, so you said earlier we appreciate and we even reward people who leave reviews. In what way do you do that?
We give them t-shirts. I'm so confused. Why don't you say, Catfish, what you want them to say?
We give them the t-shirts.
We want to get through this so we can get to the episode.
Okay, all right.
Okay. All right. So the first review is a 5-star review from somebody called Madden-ing. So, like, the name John Madden, but then Ing at the end. Madden-ing.
Got it.
And he gave us 5 stars. He titles...
But I think he's making a joke on your unstraightening.
So he's maddening.
Straightening the unstraighteners. Right. He's maddening the unmaddeners.
This is very confusing. All right. So he titled the review, Bubba and Catfish. And his review states...
Well, those are two of my favorite names.
All right. He titled... So the review says, OMJ... Oh, my job.
Oh, yes.
This podcast finally tells the story the HBO show leaves out.
Mm-hmm.
Super funny. Can't wait to download and listen each week. Bubba and Catfish keep me entertained during my morning commute. Keep it up and all hail Joffrey, first of his name.
Yes.
And no, he is not dead. Just waiting for Don Dorian to bring him back. I wonder if that was autocorrect. Beric Dondarrion.
Didn't I bring him up
to
earlier?
To bring him back and smite all the usurpers as only his grace can. Well, thank you, Madden-ing.
You know, it's funny. It wasn't until tonight that I mentioned that somebody else has come back alive. So he was smart to pick up on how Joffrey could come back.
All right. So, Madden-ing, you will be number one when we roll the dice to see who wins this t-shirt. Our second review. It says the title is The Best, 5 stars. It's by somebody who calls themselves Malibu Barbie 666.
I love it.
So she
evil
is
evil demon
she
Barbie.
She is hot, and she's on the side of His Grace King Joffrey, who's probably 777, 7 kingdoms, 7 gods. We wish there were 7 Joffreys. Her review gets straight to the point. She says, the greatest Joffrey podcast ever.
Oh, well, all right.
What an interesting qualifier there.
Well, no, what she's saying is the greatest great podcast.
Very
Joffrey
good.
Equals great.
Excellent, Malibu Barbie 66. So you will be number 2 when we roll the four-sided die to see who wins this t-shirt. Now let's go to the UK store, Catfish, and let's read these.
Well, hello, love. We've got two from the UK store.
You telling me that all I have to do is submit a review in iTunes and I can win a t-shirt?
Yes, Governor.
I'm Irish.
All right. That was beautiful.
Northern Ireland. We haven't got any reviews in the Ireland store either. Dublin, represent. I got my cousin and my aunt over just north of Dublin.
Yes, and we want to visit and stay with you. So give us a review. That means we get to stay with you.
Let's hear it. Yeah.
All right. This is by Scoot10.
Hey, Scoot10.
My 10th favorite Scoot.
Hey.
He gives it 5 Joffreys out of 5. That's the title.
You can't get any higher.
No. Just new to the podcast, but as a fan of Game of Thrones, I can't believe I've been missing this. All the other ones are on the back. You can get the other ones.
Download them now.
The guys give great reviews on the show and also provide fantastic comedy. Oh, thank you.
You know, this is truth in comedy. Because when we say Joffrey is the best, you laugh because it's true.
Exactly, exactly. If he had access to podcasts, I'm sure King Joffrey would have loved this one.
Yeah.
Maybe even as much as his beloved crossbow.
Whoa. That is high praise. Thank you so much.
All right, and the next one is by Cabby.
Wait, who is that again?
That was Scoot10.
Scoot10, you're number 3 when we roll the dice. Thank you. That was a great Joffrey-esque review.
And now we have my first favorite Cad. This is by Cad1.
Hey, Cad1.
He says, the no spin zone.
Oh, wow.
This is the only place to hear the true story of Game of Thrones.
Amen.
Important work, Bubba and Catfish. You know what? I appreciate that because sometimes we do this and we forget how vital this is to the community.
Hey, 7 hells yes. 7 hells yes. Catfish, we've talked an awful lot. Let's look at the clock. We've actually talked, it looks like, 12 minutes without hitting this episode yet. So enough is enough. Let's roll the dice. Let's give away this great The Joffrey Podcast t-shirt. And then let's jump into this episode,
I'm going to roll the Viper. I've got a four-sided die.
Let's roll it.
And we're rolling. And
hit it.
Number 4!
Ooh, number 4!
Number 4 is Cad1.
Hey, Cad1 in the UK, and we know exactly how much it's cost to send a t-shirt.
It costs more to send it than to buy it, even
a special order. The t-shirt is cheaper than it takes to mail to the United Kingdom.
But we're dedicated.
We'll mail them anyway. We've mailed them to the United Kingdom. We've mailed them to somebody from the Czech Republic. Admittedly, he sent me an address in Arizona.
We'll send it to England and Arizona.
Australia, we need you to come through. Ireland, let's talk about the countries we've been to. We haven't mailed a t-shirt yet. You've been to Cuba. We haven't mailed one to Cuba yet.
I don't know what access they have.
I've been to France. We haven't mailed one to France yet.
When I went to Cuba, someone was coming by with videotapes that people would borrow.
Oh, really?
So I'm not quite sure about their access.
VHS?
Yes, VHS. Awesome. But this was back in 2001.
That's awesome. I've been to the Hungary. We haven't mailed any there. Been to Austria, great country. Germany, Greece, Italy. We've got to mail them to all these places. So
Nepal?
I've been to Switzerland. Let's get them there, too.
Let's go.
All right. So now, Catfish, now that we've talked probably 15 minutes, people are very angry. They're writing 4-star reviews saying, why don't they just get to the damn point? Let's jump into this episode, The Mountain and the Viper. And Catfish, right off the top, why don't we go ahead and give, how many Joffreys out of 10 do you give this episode?
I'm going to give it 7, only for a reason I'll explain later, but it really deserves a 6.
Oh, wow, that's interesting, because I'm going to give it 6 Joffreys out of 10.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think...
That's crazy, since you sound surprised that I was giving it such a low review.
Yeah, but you'd normally go higher than I do. Like, in the last episode, I think you gave it an 8, and I gave it a 7. I'm giving this one a 6. I think, and I'll explain it a bit later as well, but I kind of think they had so much stuff they could have spent time on, and I guess I was a bit angry on some of the stuff they spent time on, and I didn't enjoy some of the places we spent
time on. Well, the other thing is, I mean, we all knew what was coming this week.
If you've read the book, some people,
it was set up that we were going to have the fight this week.
And we knew we had to have the fallout of Littlefinger pushing Lysa Arryn out the moon door. We knew we'd have to have that,
right,
too.
But the thing that most people were looking forward to was the fight.
Right.
And I know you kind of want to put that towards the end, but it almost made me feel like I was like, skip ahead.
Yeah, they didn't build up to the fight very well.
No, we stayed out of there the whole time, and then boom, we were there.
And then we got a scene which we'll talk about in a bit, but the Beatles scene did not build up to the fight, if you ask me. All right, so let's get into it. It seems like all these most recent weeks have been talking about these credits. And hey, Catfish, we have a new location.
What's our new location?
In the opening credits. This, as they fly up from King's Landing, they fly past the end of the crossroads, past a lot of stuff, and we get to Moat Cailin. And this is a, they call the key to the north, because the north kind of gets skinny, the land, Westeros, kind of gets skinny before you go north. And this castle here, it's on the King's Road. And so if you want to get up the to the north, you have to pass through by Moat Cailin, and so that's why
do they charge a toll?
They do charge a toll. Okay. They're not, well, they're not like our good friends the Freys, who follow King Joffrey, God rest his soul, until he comes back. But here is Moat Cailin. So what did you think of this animation here, Catfish?
I always like the animations when I see them when they're new, just because we've seen all the other animations.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting, this is a slight spoiler alert. If you go back and watch the previous episodes, and you know how when they go up to the wall, and then this season they've been doing that crazy spin move.
Spin around, right.
They do that crazy spin around where you leave the wall and you don't just move east. You move east, but after this kind of 360-degree spin. If you've been watching that 360-degree spin, frame by frame, you've actually been able to see Moat Cailin, which has been in all these 360-degree spins, which even back in the first episode of this season. So maybe that's why they did this 360-degree spin. I personally think it gives people trouble understanding where everything is in relation to each other. But anyway, otherwise, then we fly, we do the 360-degree spin, we see Braavos again, but we don't spend any time in Braavos.
I have no idea why we're seeing Braavos. Earlier in the season, you were so upset, we kept going to a place they weren't showing, and now they're showing Braavos when we're not going there.
Right. I guess the point is, they're going to show what they're going to show. You know, it's kind of like, flip a coin, we'll just show whatever that blank in hell we want to show. And so, the episode begins in a place you kind of had to guess, and just by... You could tell.
I'm going to give it to you, though.
You guessed it. I guessed that this was our Mole's Town, mainly because of the preview from the last episode. It previewed that they would be going to Mole's Town, so I just guessed that this would be it. And I'm going to start right off the back. Why am I so tough? Why am I giving this only 6 Joffreys out of 10?
You don't like ladies who burp.
Ladies who burp songs, very classy. I date many of them, but I really think. I thought this was just kind of wasted time. I didn't think, and I know that this opening burp along, you know, they should do this on The Voice, don't you think? This would really liven up The Voice to see who would spin
now,
around.
Now, see, I kind of disagree with you.
I thought this...
Only in that we spend so much time with all the people who are jockeying around for position that I kind of do enjoy seeing how everyone else is affected, the little people. And I'm not talking about Uncle Tyrion, who doesn't measure up.
Boy, Catfish, you know it. I didn't. I know it seems silly that when she's at the table probably for at the most 2 minutes, probably not even that long, but I was like, who cares? These aren't the characters we love. They're not Joffrey. They're like the furthest you can get from Joffrey to the truth. So I didn't like it very much. And then she goes back and she's insulting Gilly, kind of attacking Gilly because Gilly is a wildling. She's like, Gilly, your wildling baby's making too much noise.
Right. And Gilly's like, you know who else is making too much noise?
Right.
The people who I know are actually people, and you think they're damn owls. That's who's making too much noise.
Right. What this? And I'm going to go a bit crazy. I'm going to even go on some of the directing and framing. This scene between the burping whore, which is what I'll refer to as from now on, the burping whore and Gilly, they have a long part where they're like not showing the burping whore. They're just showing Gilly's face, and Gilly's like, that doesn't sound like a real owl. It's that,
mm-hmm. I'm coming to kill you. Ooh.
Go to the left. Ooh.
Oh, I'm a wildling.
Swing around to the back. Let me know when you're there. Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. Ooh. It's fun killing these members of the Night's Watch who stuck down here. Ooh. Ooh. Ooh.
So anyway, so then we jump outside, and maybe I liked this shot of a guy. He goes up to the well, and of course we see him get his throat slit. Well style, and then maybe we see the well turn a little red from his blood, and it's Tormund Giantsbane, our favorite beardy guy.
Yes, who has hair,
right? And in come the Fens, those evil bald guy with scars. We see Egret, and she is TCB. She's just like Elvis. She's taking care of business, and she kind of seems p- pissed off. She kind of seems like the woman you wouldn't want to date. You know what I mean?
Well, let's just say I don't think she's quite gotten over John yet.
Well, I'm just saying John might have been... John Snow, he's a bastard, let's be honest. But he might have been smart getting out of that relationship while the getting was good, you think? And so they go through and they're killing everybody. And Egret, she stone cold is killing people when the burping whore tries to get her. And she's like, shish kebab.
Yeah.
And
she gets her right through the stomach. And you know when you got a hole in your stomach, it's hard to force that air back up to burp.
Right. That poor woman. She'll never burp again.
You'll never burp again.
And what's interesting is though, even though the mountain got a hole in his stomach and he lived, that woman died immediately. So then Egret...
Poor nutrition.
Then Egret hears Craster Jr., or excuse me, Sam Jr. making noise, and she finds Gilly. And Egret, even though she's an evil killing bitch...
who clearly has had no problem killing women...
Right, or men, or people's parents, she sees Gilly with the baby, and she just raises a finger to her mouth and says, you're next.
And then
she says, shh, be quiet.
And speaking of babies, we got a nice transition to a crying big baby.
So you cry from baby Sam to big baby.
To big baby Sam.
Right, baby Huey Sam. And so Sam is just distraught, and we see kind of like the fun bunch here. Kind of like the Scooby gang up here at the wall.
We talked about this because two episodes he was like, this is a really great idea, and we're like, Sam... You seem kind of smart enough to know this is not a good idea. And then last episode, he was like, oh, that wasn't a good idea. And we're like, Sam, we told you so.
Right. I sent a raven, but Sam didn't get it. Look at him. He's blubbering. He's what I like to call a double B.
Double B?
A blubbering baby.
Blubbering baby.
All right. So let's go through the whole good time.
And he's got what I call a BC.
A BC?
Bowl cut.
A bowl cut, Sam. So he's here with the good time gang. So we've got Grin. We've got Ed. We've got Pip, and we've got John. And what's interesting is John doesn't talk too much, but the boys try to cheer up old Sam, and they're like, hey, if Gilly survived evil Uncle Craster, good old Uncle Craster, maybe she survived. And Sam, boy, he really wanted to be convinced. You know, that was like, they didn't have to push too hard.
Yeah, and then after that good news, then they talk about how the odds are about to be 1,000 to 1 against them.
Yeah, so there are 100,000 coming, and that's just north of the wall. And they go, we've got 105. And Ed's like, don't you remember Blackjack, Kegs, and Molly? And Gren's like, they must have been in Molestown. Now we're down to 102.
Now, are they also counting Blindy McDragon Targaryen?
Maester Aemon, should they count him? Like, they go, we got 100. Wait, no, they go, we got 100. 102 if you count Maester Aemon and Sam.
He might have nice ninja skills. You know, he'll be able to fight people even blind.
Right. So this scene, they're all like, let's take a toast to our own death.
Yeah, toast to our death.
But this, see, the point of this scene here, I'm going to go further into why.
Get into
depth. I wasn't a huge fan of the Molestown scene. I guess it was good action. Nice to see Egret be nice to Gilly. But that scene at the wall was obviously to build for the attack on Castle Black in the wall. And yet, because it's so early, there's no way that building of action is anyway going to tie into the next episode. And because we only went there once, and it was so short, and it was just five guys sitting around a table, that doesn't build action. That doesn't, you know, you should be getting excited for the big wall battle
it's
to come.
It's hard for me to get excited anytime we see Jon Snow.
Oh, right.
Mopey McMoperson.
Oh, the double M.
Yes, double M.
All right, and so then
speaking of double M's, or should I say double C's?
Then we cut to Marine and Grey Worm. I don't know if the worm or the shells got cut from Grey Worm, but he is checking out people bathing, and one of the people bathing is delicious. Delicious, beautiful Missandei the Translator. And she is a very attractive woman, and he keeps his hands underneath the water like many men would.
I think what he's wondering right now is if she knows Greek.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that, catfish?
If anyone knows what I mean by Greek when it comes to naked women, please send a message
now,
directly to Bubba.
Right. Okay, now, catfish, she sees Grey Worm looking, and she covers up. Why do you bother covering up? Grey Worm, you know, what's he going to do? What's he going to do when he comes for you?
Well, Gray, she knows. She's, I mean, yeah, it's covering up, right? It's like when you don't want to see something and you've got your fingers splayed open so you can still see it.
Right.
She's kind of like, how delicious are these? Also, maybe she just wanted, maybe she felt a little self-conscious about them naked, the way they were hanging. So she wanted to cup them and kind of make them look a little bit, you know, higher up.
That's what I do when I'm at the beach.
Absolutely.
All right, and then we have another, a scene of, that's kind of referring to the previous scene.
Girl talk.
Girl talk. Doing each other's hair in marine. And you just got your hair cut today, Catfish. Did you get treatment like Daenerys is giving Missandei here?
No, but mostly because my hair, I don't braid anything into my hair.
No, you don't.
So, at least, never mind. Okay, yes. No.
Okay. Is this like the Greek reference?
Yes. Yes, it's also like that.
Okay. But this point, here I'm going to be terrible, and maybe it's my book knowledge. Maybe it's, even though I think Missandei's lovely, Grey Worm seems like a cool cat if he would follow Joffrey. I'm like, with so much to happen in this episode, why are we spending this time on this?
Well, here's the one thing that I'll say about that.
Let's hear it.
Is that, you know,
no, I don't.
Daenerys Khaleesi has been so serious and whatever this year that maybe we got to see a little, like, even though she's growing into this, like, a powerful woman, which I'm not quite buying, but whatever, that's what she's supposed
to be. If she wants to get with Joffrey, she's got to be a powerful woman.
Exactly. So they're trying to show sort of a friendly side to her. Although I'm not sure, is that the way how it works, the power? Like, you have, like, the queen doing her translator's hair?
Yeah, that's, you know, she's the queen, and she will rule and do hair. You don't remember a couple episodes ago, she was like, I will do what queens do.
And now, now if you want to talk about what's boring, because at least that's interesting,
yeah.
I don't care too much about Grey Worm and Missandei as long. I mean, I'm happy to have her get naked, but then we go through this long scene. I'm sorry, you shouldn't be sorry. I didn't want to see you. It's okay if you saw me. I'm glad I saw you. Yes, I am too.
If it had been
that long, that would have been okay. But, I mean, come on.
So these three...
I mean, we really want to know is...
Yes, what do we want
to know? Does he still have the root?
The root and stem, baby, let's know. But hold on. So this scene, all three scenes, so the scene in the stream, the hairdo scene, and the scene in the throne room where Grey Worm comes and talks to her, that took 5 minutes. And this is terrible to say. Like I say, I love Missandei. She's beautiful. But 5 minutes in this episode where we could have spent
episode 8
to spend 5 minutes on this stuff, I think it was another reason why I'm going to be tough on this episode and give it a 6, Catfish.
Well, I'll tell you why I give it a 7 later, and I think that people who are non-book readers will agree.
Okay, yeah, I think so. Well, I wonder if non-book readers are also kind of frustrated, and the season's supposed to be building, and this
isn't. But I'm going to tell you why book readers like this. But non-book readers like this episode more than book readers.
Now.
No, I'm going to tell you when it happens.
Okay, so we cut from there back to Westeros. We cut from Meereen in Essos on the other side of the Narrow Sea, and we cut to Ramsay Snow's army.
Now, here's another thing,
too. And he is talking to Reek, a.k.a. Theon Greyjoy.
Do we have to... This kind of reminds me of that movie, The Master,
where
the same scenes were over and over again. Do we have to see how he controls him every time? It seems like, don't we have a shorthand? Get in there, you know who you are. Like, he really has to play like that he's playing with his mind every time we have to see that. We got it already. When he shaved him, I understood he had complete control over him.
Right.
I don't need that fed to me every time.
Every time. Well, I'll say the one thing I thought about this is first Ramsay is dissing the Ironborn. He's like, you know, they're far from the ocean. Even though Moat Cailin, I know they're kind of swamps and stuff, it's not really that far from there's some water there. But anyway.
On the swampy sea.
I thought it was a bit interesting. Again, maybe you could have done it a bit tighter. Where here, Ramsay is like, hey, you're Theon Greyjoy. And he's kind of talking to Reek. And you thought, well, maybe would Reek fight it? Catfish, are we experiencing an earthquake?
I think we just had a little bit of an earthquake.
Folks, here.
That is exciting. Live.
Live on, earthquake, everybody.
On the Joffrey podcast.
It's 7:36 p.m. on Sunday night, Pacific time, Sunday night. Tweet it out. So go back in time and send out a tweet. We just had a little earthquake here at the studio where we record this show.
It's because we've been talking too long without mentioning Joffrey.
That's true. The ground. I got the earth moving under my feet. So... Theon comes in, or excuse me, Reek comes in to Moat Cailin, and he's carrying the white flag, and you see the castle is lined with the Kraken, the symbol of the Greyjoy family. And Theon comes in, and he meets...
They do a good job here, even when he comes in, looking at the people. You can tell they're not doing too well here.
No, it's rough. Well, you took a castle in a swamp.
I built a castle in a swamp. It fell in the swamp. But the third castle, it burned down and fell in the swamp. But the fourth castle.
So here they are in Moat Cailin. And this one guy, he says he's in charge of the Greyjoy forces there at Moat Cailin. And he's calling Theon pretty much a bitch. He's like, hey, you little punk. You ain't worth stuff. And you're like a dog. He calls him, you're like a wounded dog. And I'm going to stay here and you know what?
Now, what sort of... The only thing that's interesting about this scene, really, to me is...
Yeah.
Is you see Theon is just about to really lose it.
Yeah, he is.
And you know the gig is going to be up. Right. When somebody else decides to take matters into his hands.
That was kind of a fun little twist. Don't
that
you think it was?
A fun little twist.
Now, everybody...
Because at first I was like, well, who the heck... Because at first I thought, oh, was it the Boltons?
Right. This is pretty good, but what's great is that this is from the fifth book, A Dance with Dragons. We are jumping into A Dance of Dragons material.
Well, that's what happens when you want to keep everybody in play and,
right.
and people are out of play when you're in the books.
Oh, if you look at the guy behind him in the scene, you can tell he is getting PO'd and he's had about enough of this. And he's gonna kill the first
he's
in the command.
He's doing a lot of good eye work back
right,
there.
Right, he's doing, yes. And so Theon goes back to how his father bent the knee. And so what's interesting is, are they dissing Balin Greyjoy because he bent the knee?
They are, and he says he would have never done that.
Right. You know what?
But clearly he did do it.
And then he spits and coughs up blood on Theon. And so this is the point where you're talking about where Theon's like, I'm going to lose it. I've had enough of this. I'm a whipped dog.
Yeah, we see that a lot. He is about to lose his shits for real.
And he says, are you a woman, boy? Because Theon now is technically a woman because he had his stuff cut off. I'm pretty
sure. He confused him. He calls him woman, and then he calls him boy.
And whip
Theon's
dog.
Like, well.
It's like, are you a woman, a boy, or a whip dog?
And Theon's like, a little bit of mix of all three.
Oh, and he says, I'm Reek.
He does say, I'm Reek.
Right when he could have given that away, the number two goes number one on that guy's head.
Now, I will say this.
Yeah.
One of my more favorite transitions on this show.
Yeah, this was a good transition.
Where the guy says, hey, if we surrender, we'll live, right? And he's like, sure. And then the next scene is that very same guy totally dead.
Oh, and he hasn't been dead. Theon's like, you're going home. And then the next thing you see, the guy has been flayed. One of his eyes has been ripped out. He's got friggin', what are those, clubs in him? Oh, my God, this guy, he's been to Benihana. And Ramsay's like,
but
you
Ramsay
know,
is really taken
right.
this flaying thing
yeah.
seriously.
He's like, you know, traditions are important. Even though I'm a Snow at this moment, not a Bolton, I
well,
want to do the
really
flayed
gotta,
manna.
He's got to go the extra. You know, when someone, like, joins a new country...
Yeah.
Then they really kind of learn the things and they know more about the history because they're really just trying to, like, to be a part of it.
And at the end of the scene, Ramsay says, hey, get ready, Reek. We're going to go to our new home. And that sets up what we're going to see in the next scene. But then we jump to a scene I actually did like. I thought this was a good bit. We cut to
trial
about Littlefinger in Erie.
Now I am totally distracted, though, after noticing... this actor's mouth last week.
After he talks out of the side of his mouth.
Yeah, now all I can do is, I don't know what he is doing. Because again, if it was somebody trying to do an accent, I could understand if they were trying to do something different. But he's actually Irish. He's actually
Correct.
Doing his accent. And so I'm wondering what he's doing with his mouth.
Catfish, I'll have to edit that out because, like Littlefinger, people can't understand what you just said.
With his mouth.
So we see here... We see here three Lords of the Vale... And I really like...
Well, two lords and a lady.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Catfish. Female listeners, that's catfish at CJGman67 on
Look,
Twitter.
I didn't set up the rules.
All right. So, anyway, so there are three Lords of the Vale, and Littlefinger is trying to make it look like Liza Aaron committed suicide, Catfish.
they're not buying that because they know that he is just a jumped up little punk who's a whoremonger and nothing.
They even bring up a great point, which some of our friends, the Tea Partiers, like, and they're like, "You've got some non-Westerosi blood in you, Littlefinger." And he's like, "Yeah, Littlefinger goes, my great grandfather was from across the Narrow Sea in Essos, in Bravos," and they're like, "No amnesty. You won't get a little driver's license, Littlefinger."
No, it's like when you move into a small town and you're the new people for like 20 years.
Right, yeah, amen.
They said, "We've been around for 2,000 years, so you know what?
1,000 years, yeah." But Littlefinger is trying to say it's suicide, and did you think he was in deep trouble there, Catfish? What did you think?
I was trying to figure out how he was going to get out of it. I knew he was going to get out of it, but this next part, and I will say this and the ending of the fight is why I think those people who didn't read the books, or for people like me who read the first couple books over and over again but didn't really like the much later books, so now I'm starting to get surprises. In the first episodes, I was like, "Oh, I can't wait till this happens and that happens," remembering things. But now I'm starting to get surprises. I did not remember this scene at all. Well, I didn't know what was going to happen in this scene.
This kind of scene, and it's not really this scene. It's slightly different. This is from the fourth book, A Feast for Crows. Yeah, but it has a different spin on it because of the different kind of situation around Lyza Arryn's death. And so Sansa Stark comes out, and she's like, "I'm not Elaine, Littlefinger's niece.
Well, I
am Sansa Stark."
I knew that something different was going to happen when she says, "I cannot tell a lie," because you know that's totally a misdirect.
Hold on. Let me say, "I cannot tell a lie."
Good point. I know you're telling the truth. No, I knew that somehow she was going to save his bacon, because that's just a writer trick to come out and somebody say something and you're like, "Oh my God, it's all going to come out." And then, of course, it's not.
And so our friends at Geek Girl Soup, they call this a double double S.
Double double S.
A Stockholm Syndrome, Sansa Stark.
That is.
And they're wondering if that's why she just totally lied to save Littlefinger's bacon.
However, later on in the episode, I think it makes it clear she's realized that she's kind of taking charge of her life and this is a way to do it. It feels to me like that walk down the stairs was like, "All right, you may be using me, but I'm going to use you as well."
It definitely felt like she's trying to take some control. And so I like this scene a lot. We have Sophie Turner, the actress, giving some tears. Maybe the tear was, I would love to ask the actress, and if the tear was she was trying to remember her time when she could have been with Joffrey. And that's what made her cry. Mm. She could have had a king, and instead she settled for Littlefinger. And I also call me crazy, I really like this this football coach who played... Royce, head of House.
He totally is not an olden time, does not have an olden time feel to him.
No, he looks like he likes kielbasa sausage. But I got to be honest also, Catfish, and this is a great little nugget dropped in here. She's like, "Lord Royce, I met you when I was a little girl, when you were bringing your son Waymar up to the wall." And so jump back all the way to the very first episode of the show in season one. And before the opening credits, we had the scene of the three Night's Watchmen north of the wall.
Right.
Who get, two of them get slaughtered by the White Walkers. And then one gets, after the credits, gets his head chopped off by Ned. Well, the guy with the toad who was leading the party.
Right, the guy who was sort of the good-looking dude. He was from money.
Yeah, and he was this guy's son, according to the show. So that's a fun little...
That's a nug.
Fun little nugget of information there. And so Sansa Stark gets Littlefinger off the hook. And so what's great is when this old woman, this old lady, starts giving Sansa a hug, and you see Littlefinger...
You knew it was going to happen
there. You see Littlefinger and Sansa kind of giving each other a look like...
Like, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, we've read these Joffrey POV chapters, and we've known that Sansa has been... Double S? Surly Stark. And this is where we finally get to see it.
Well, this is my question. What do you think... what do you think she thinks she's done here? Because even considering the later scene where it seems like it's not that she has Stockholm Syndrome, but that she's like, "All right, I'm going to..." What do you think she thinks she's going to get out of doing this?
Well, I call it, like you do, Catfish, a double P.
Double P.
It's a power play. She knows that she could, you know, she could totally roast this SOB Littlefinger, and instead...
But once she gets him off the hook, I don't know how much more power she has.
Oh, I don't know. I think she knows that Littlefinger is kind of wrapped around her finger.
Smart move.
So Littlefinger here, you know, he thinks he's so powerful and he's done all this stuff, but maybe she can manipulate him with a little kissy-kissy.
And speaking of manipulating,
yeah.
Right after that, Littlefinger does do some manipulating.
Yeah, that's right.
He manipulates little whining teat sucker right out of the castle.
Right. He's like, hey, you don't want to support Tommen. And if it had been Joffrey, they would have been like, oh, we love King Joffrey. But he's like, do you want to support King Tommen? And they're like, no, that's terrible. He's not Joffrey. Yeah. We won't support him.
The other guy's like, he stole my seat one time at a game.
Right. So then they walk down the stairs, and in Littlefinger, he's saying that his plan is to actually put Robin Arryn on the throne.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know, yes, there have been times, it's time for the Vale to take control of all seven kingdoms. And is this the way Littlefinger can grab power? He's got Sansa Stark, who maybe the North would rally around. Now he's got Robin Arryn.
Right, but there's no way. I've got to believe that he believes he's sending that dude out there to die.
Little Robin Arryn?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Robin Arryn, you don't remember our Double S spinoff special about Robin Arryn? It was great. We know that he's trying to follow in Joffrey's footsteps with his temperament, his leadership.
Right.
And so Robin Arryn, there's no way that Littlefinger will be able to touch a hair on his head.
All right.
So then we jump back to Meereen. And this, okay, so...
They're doing a little redecorating around the roads.
Right. To be honest, you know how like towns have, come see, we've painted this cow, we've painted these, in my college town, Athens, they painted a bunch of bulldogs around town as a sightseeing thing. Here it's like, hey, come see the corpses that we crucified several episodes ago. And so this scene and this whole bit of action that we're going to follow is one of the reasons I got so frustrated that we spent time with Missandei in Grey Worm. Because it feels like this part of the show, they didn't really develop enough time with and didn't really build up. Mm-hmm. So a little orphan boy, I guess, kind of looks like he's still wearing the slave outfit, to be completely honest. He gives Ser Barristan a letter, and it's the pardon of Ser Jorah. And Ser Barristan's like, oh snap, what's this?
You know, and then what he does is, and again, this is the kind of ridiculousness that got Ned killed. If you know something about somebody, don't go and tell them that you know something about them.
Oh, no, not at all.
Don't go say, hey, by the way, I have this thing that's going to probably get you killed. Just hang out here while I turn my back on you and go tell somebody else.
And so when we cut to Jorah, we cut to this map scene, and it's important to note, everybody, that these are two maps together. So Meereen is technically not really that close to the Narrow Sea and King's Landing. It's pretty far away. But they pan across the map, two different maps, to show you that Jorah is at least thinking about going back to King's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
Ser Barristan comes up to him, and Ser Jorah's kind of dismissive. Like, what
I'm
are you
surprised
doing
Ser Barristan didn't say, when are you ever going to take off that damn blue scarf?
And yellow
at
shirt.
Least change
right.
it.
Right. Try. Well, Ser Barristan's been wearing this outfit for quite a while, I got to be honest. Which one do you think smells worse?
I guess Barristan's, but you know, you don't notice it because it's all black. When you're wearing the same damn brightly colored shirt and brightly colored scarf.
Right. Well, Ser Barristan's thinning. You know, he's wearing the black because he's got to thin and make it look like he could still fight when Joffrey kicked him off the Kingsguard because he couldn't fight.
So Ser Friendzone finally reads the pardon.
Right.
And is like, have you told the woman I'm hot for yet?
Yeah, he's like, have you told Daenerys?
And then Barristan says, essentially holds his hand out, give that to me. If I would have been Jorah, I'd have been like, hey, is this pardon written to you?
Right.
No, it's well, mine.
Reading mail is an offense. Crucify him, Unsullied.
Mm-hmm.
And Jorah's like, let me speak with her in private. And Barristan's like, you'll never be alone with her again. Jorah, you know, he not only wanted to be alone with her, he wanted to be alone in her bed with her.
Desperately.
He wanted to do the Khaleesi. He wanted to unleash his dragon with her. And it doesn't feel like it's ever going to happen now, does it?
Honestly, they made it pretty clear this was never going to happen, almost to the point of ridiculousness, where we did a bit about Ser Jorah in the friend zone.
Right. So Ser Jorah comes to the throne room, and the rest of Team Khaleesi's there, except Dario, who got sent to Yunkai last episode. So Jorah's trying to walk up the steps, and look who gets a little antsy is Grey Worm and Barristan, and they're like, "You've come far enough, you jerk." And Daenerys...
She puts the squeeze on him. That's what we say. Right. She put it a squeeze on him.
She does not look like she wants to braid his hair. She is P.O.'d. She is angry. And she's like, "Tell me what's going on here, Sir Jorah." And he's like, "Look."
And he tries to bullshit his way out of it. Well, he's like, "Oh, of course they're going to try to pin the blame on me. Of course Tywin's going to do this." And then she pulls out the, except the mail system is so bad. This was sent 3 years ago.
Right. Now, so Jorah, he doesn't put up enough of a fight. If this is the woman you love, now he tries the honesty. So guys, honesty never works.
Mm-hmm.
We've learned in this episode that Peeping Toms does work, because Missandei loved Peeping Tom on her. So guys, go ahead and be a Peeping Tom.
I think, if we were to reference the girls at Geek Girl Soup, I don't think they would approve of what the show indicates how you're successful with women. Peeping, raping.
Raping on the altar. Right.
But sort of being respectful to somebody and telling them that you love them, even though maybe you made a small mistake once, that does not fly.
But Jorah's like, "Hey, I stopped you from drinking the wine." And she's like, "But because you knew it was poison." And he's like, "But I stopped it." You know, he should have been screaming, "Lady, I have got the worst set of blue balls ever. I've been following you through the desert. Yeah. I followed you to Craig and Carr. Talk about a time waster there."
But what I like about this scene is he's on his knees, and her eye line is, she's got a crazy eye line. It's like she's looking at the ceiling for some reason.
If she's trying to get across that she doesn't have the strength to look him in the eyes and say, "Get out of here," or is she saying, "You are not worthy"? It does come across as
someone
who's
strong is someone who tells someone to get out. You look him right in the eye, and I get this. And here's the other thing,
right?
But he's been with her forever, and this is
forever.
I don't feel her pain here. I don't feel like this character has been developed very well.
No, but it's like I said, think if we had spent those 5 minutes with Grey Worm and Missandei, having a scene of them being really close, Jorah and Sir Friendzone and Daenerys being really close, and then you came to this, and then it's suddenly like, "I thought we were friends! We were friends!"
You know? Jorah's like, "See what happens when you don't give up the nut?"
Right. He is just like, "Man, I should have let the wine merchant poison you." I tell you, and she's still not looking at him. She's looking off into space here, Catfish. I guess
this is the part where we're supposed to see how hurt she is. I'm not really getting it. And then we see a scene of him riding his ass out of town.
Now, what's tough is he's riding the south side out of town, so that's back towards Yunkai and Dario. It'd be nice if she had let him ride out the north side of town, more towards Westeros in the Free Cities. But anyway, he rides off, and that is good CGI work. We criticize it some, but when it's in the background and blurry like that, it's pretty good, huh, Catfish?
Not bad.
Okay. Now it's time for our favorite family affair.
Yeah!
What did you think of... So I like that Daenerys and Jorah stuff. I just feel like it didn't build enough. All of a sudden
it was there, and she was angry, and we didn't really see her, like, rage.
Yeah. All right, so then we cut to a scene of the Boltons and the Snows. And Ramsay's like, "Here's the flag," and it's the two forces coming together. There's some CGI work to make it look like there's this huge army between them.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they put some snow in the background because, once again, the evil Stark words, winter is coming. And so, what did you think of this scene? Did you like this scene, Catfish? I thought this scene was fine. I thought it was good.
It was just long enough. And if we'd gotten as much information in other scenes as we got in this scene, those scenes would have been like 20 minutes. This was a cool scene.
Yeah, it's short. It's to the point. Ramsay's a terrible, evil bastard who wants to be like Joffrey and can't do it. And so...
And the pop is like, "Hey, pop quiz, hot shot, where are we?" And even though he gets it wrong, he still offers him to give him his name.
Right, he's like 700 miles that way, 400 miles that way, 300 miles that way.
And Rhys is like, "You want me to put up one of those signs with the arrows? Would that help?"
So wait a minute, I have to go 300 miles before I'm in the north? Ramsay, you stupid little figure! And so, look at this. Ramsay's like, What? Say my name! Mm-hmm. Say your name! And he's like, Ramsay Snow.
He does seem a little surprised by this because already it said to Reek, you know what's going to happen.
Right.
So I'd like to believe that this is genuine, but right. He knew this was coming.
Maybe he knew it was coming. I don't know. This is very confusing.
Right? It seems
but
to me
nice
here like
short...
he's totally shocked by it, but...
Yeah. But this is an interesting idea. So did we know before this on the show that bastards, you know, through some royal decree or maybe Warden of the North decree... could become actual children. And so do you think this is a prelude for where that evil bastard Jon Snow becomes a normal person?
Well, can't you just tell if there's somebody I would think you could adopt them in your name. So it's not like he's saying you wouldn't have to do it just with someone that you sired.
And so Reek really...
Like we could make him Reek Bolton.
Right. Reek really, really... is just totally whipped, and they ride towards their new castle.
I believe he gets offered another bath, though.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of scenes.
Bath time.
This is the second scene in here where we see someone of power
right.
sort of doing something nice for someone not in power. Braiding their hair or offering to give them another
and
bath.
And theoretically, they're riding off towards Winterfell.
I don't that see the smoke in the air.
Yeah, that was also a different angle. Like, what's been interesting every time we've seen Winterfell in past episodes has always been kind of like from this exact same hill and looking at it from this one angle. So theoretically, we're looking at it from the south here. And
okay.
And I guess that's why it looks kind of different. Or maybe because it burned down. Who knows? It's a bit confusing. And then we cut back and... Sansa Stark is in a room and she's sewing. If we remember back to the very first episode of the show, she was sewing in that. She loves to sew. And so Littlefinger's like, yo, girl, you backed me up in there. Why'd you do that?
Yeah. He's like, well, you grown, girl.
Yeah, you're not a child any longer. Hello.
She's like, I know, because you tried to put the squeeze on me.
He's like, why'd you
help? She actually didn't say anything like that. That was just me.
And she, but do you believe her answer? Her first answer is like, well, look, if they knew the truth, they'd have thrown you through the moon door.
And
that's
absolutely
true. Who knows what they would have done with me?
Yeah, he says, I don't know. She says, well, neither do I. So it feels clear here that she, and again, we got tweeted at in the middle of the show after
right.
the first episode, after the first scene. So it seems clear here that she's kind of. Taken over. She has her own agency at this point.
Yeah, she's kind
popular
of
phrase.
Grown up. A lot of people feel like Sansa's never been in control and so they don't like her. And right now, Sansa, I've always liked her because she always loved Joffrey, but right now Sansa is kind of taking her own agency, Catfish.
Yeah.
And she's saying, like, this is the way this shit's going to be.
Now, sadly, I didn't like her. I've liked her throughout. I didn't like her at the beginning, obviously, when, you know, she got... You know, when she got involved and she did some bad things.
Right.
But I liked her when she was going through a bunch of stuff. But now that she seems to have learned from her time in King's Landing that manipulating is the name of the game, a little bit less likable.
Yeah.
But hey, she's got to do what she's got to do.
Got to roll with the punches. So now...
Speaking of rolling with the punches...
Right. Or the bites.
Bam.
We go to the good old Bloody Gate where the Hound, Sandor Clegane, and Arya...
Or Odd Couple 3, as I refer to them.
Odd Couple number 3. They're walking up, and they're, you know, he's like, I'm finally going to be rid of you. And notice he's still got a little itch. He's still scratching at where Biter bit him on the neck in the last episode. So what did you like this scene, Catfish?
I did like this scene simply because, again, this is another time where we get to see somebody sort of a different point of view of them. And, you know, we're sort of at the beginning of the scene here as we're watching it. But Arya's true
color.
Laughter
right.
was amazing to see her.
It was fun. I actually liked the laugh.
You know, the laugh was great. And it was really just like, you know, she was a little sensitive here.
Yeah, but it's
I think she's definitely cool.
But it's slightly interesting that you know, this is another relative of hers dead. And at this point, she just starts laughing. She's laughing, I assume, because she thinks the Hound is going to get screwed out of what he came for.
Well, yeah, all this way, the Hound had a plan, and now they're 3 days too late. I mean, they've been traveling the whole damn season. They've been traveling for like 10 years, and now they're only 3 days late. If only they hadn't stopped to kill so many peasants on the way.
You like Sandor's face right here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a dead look on his face. He's like,
shit.
Oh, you got to be kidding me. Now, we got to keep in mind, and I actually got a bit confused about this when I was watching this scene, is that these guards don't know about Sansa Stark. Sansa admitted herself to that those Lords of the Vale and the Lady. They didn't. They didn't let anybody know. And they even said, "We'll keep your secret." So
let me ask you this.
Yeah.
So many times, and I'm sure it's frustrating for the television viewers. It's probably still frustrating for the people who read the books because it was frustrating when they read the books. Is this yet another like the sixth or seventh time when some of the Stark siblings are going to cross, be within like a minute of each other, but still not meet?
Well, we don't see Arya and the Hound again for the rest of the episode. Once again, wasted time on stuff that I wasn't fond of. So who's to say that the Hound won't get admitted and then get to see? Or, you know, Robin Arryn is about to do a tour of the Vale. He's doing the Vale Tour 14, you know, hitting again, all the big stops. And so maybe they'll run into each other then.
This is another thing I found interesting because I'd forgotten this part.
Yes.
It's so funny that, again, it's because I reread them because I love them much
when
more.
When did you reread them? How many years ago?
Probably right before the show started.
Well, that was only 4 years ago.
But I didn't reread them all because I didn't like the other ones as much. So I reread the first two. So again, it's another thing.
You reread the first two? You didn't read Storm of Swords?
No,
that's my favorite book, in my opinion.
I just reread the first couple. I didn't think I started it soon enough. And then I was like, okay. So there, again, at the beginning, I was like, I can't wait for this to happen. And now I'm like, well, I don't know what's going to happen. But also because I didn't really like some of the stuff in the later books, I'm like, it may end up being different than George R. R. Martin wrote it. And frankly, I trust the showrunners more than I trust George R. R. Martin.
This episode is one of the reasons I don't trust the showrunners more than George R. R. Martin. He's slow, but you know he doesn't have about 5 minutes / 5 pages about Missandei and Grey Worm. You know, it was kind of fun. And I guess if it's in a book, you can flip past those pages or kind of skim it, where if it's in the show, you got to sit through the whole thing.
Well, it's funny. I mean, again, I agree with you. I was complaining about those scenes as well. I just think that as far as the overall arcing of where the story is going, that I trust these guys more just because of how much I disliked some of the later books.
Okay, so we were talking about Arya laughing. Did you like this scene? Did you like her laugh?
I did. It was great. We got to see another side of her, and you know, I love her character. And
we know why she's a double S.
Double S.
A surly Stark, because she's laughing when her relatives dies. That's, you know,
exactly.
I laughed when her relatives died, and now she is too. That's great. So then we jump back into the Vale, and Littlefinger is talking to my boy Robin Arryn. He's trying to be like Joffrey. He was trying to be a strong leader, trying to have the right temperament, like Joffrey had a temperament.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's only been 3 days, according to the show, and he does not seem that broken up about his mother dying, does he?
No. Perhaps he's found someone else to suckle at.
Perhaps. And so now Littlefinger is implying once again that his plan is to put little Robin Arryn on the throne. Do you like the idea of, if it isn't Joffrey, little Robin Arryn? Who do you like?
He's a reasonable substitution.
Okay, and then out comes, and holy smokes, she is a vision of, well, because she's not 18.
Wait, is it Maleficent?
No, she's got wings like Maleficent. But, you know, she's not 18 yet, so I guess I have to say that she looks very nice.
Striking.
Right. She looks... Oh, my God. Joffrey should have deserved that. That is all I'm saying. Oh, my goodness. Because she's not 18, I'll just say she looks very, very nice.
Striking.
Very striking. Very regal.
Speaking of striking something.
Yes.
Here is something, again,
oh
that we
Lord.
Just talked about.
Oh
and
God.
Again, even though I trust them on the overarching thing, this is horrible. We have a 6-minute scene.
6 minutes. My score was a 6, and it wasn't 6 because of these 6 minutes. It is a scene about...
That was 6 minutes, and now 12 minutes of my life watching it again.
Right. It's about the Lannister brothers bonding, the Kingslayer brothers bonding, And they've had good bonding scenes before.
There's been great monologues between the both of them. The scene with Tyrion and Oberyn last week was electrifying.
You liked that monologue.
Yes.
You liked the monologue of evil Uncle Tyrion at his trial.
Yes.
But what about this monologue about
I don't understand what
cousin we don't know about in...
I don't understand. You know, when you're writing a TV show like this,
yes,
theoretically, every little thing means something. Even though
you only have 10 episodes, you can't waste time.
Even with
time.
The missing day, Grey Worm, it means something in this sort of like you're setting up these two kind of lost people sort of finding each
right.
other. We know so much about these characters already
yes.
that presumably every time we have a scene, it should be either deepening their characters or like, you know, last week's philosophical discussion sort of, you know, making a sort of deeper point. This one I had no idea what it was doing.
Well, it was 6 minutes on Orson, that's O-R-S-O-N, Orson Lannister, and maybe mocking somebody who was a bit simple. We don't like people who mock Hodor, and so we certainly don't like evil Uncle Tyrion
maybe,
for mocking Orson.
Maybe I'm a simple American.
You
but
are. Very simple.
I am. At the end of this story, I would have liked to at least proffered a lesson that Tyrion learned.
Okay, so now the reviewer at Rolling Stone magazine, in his review of this episode,
yes.
he was pitching the idea that this whole episode is about some evil god crushing some small innocent bug. Meaning, and he gave the examples of like, look at what happened to those Ironborn Greyjoy fighters who were there in Moat Cailin, and they got crushed like a bug. Mm-hmm. You had Ser Jorah being crushed, his dreams being crushed like a bug by Daenerys, which I kind of think is a stretch. And then he's talking about, well, later...
Ser Jorah did it of his own... That was his sins coming back to him. If you want to talk about, like, a bug who's just innocent being crushed, you would have to say that it's the world is being cruel without justification towards you.
Okay, so, well, that was his thing, and then he said Oberyn Martell, the Red Viper, being crushed like a bug. You know, the idea is that you do this thing about, and then you saw what happened to Oberyn's head.
The problem is,
he was crushed.
I do like longer scenes with monologues, and maybe if this had been earlier in the episode, early in the season, I would have liked it. But the problem that I said is, we've been waiting this whole time for the dang fight to start. Let me say, damn, this is explicit content.
Explicit
for this
content.
This freaking fight to start, and instead we get a super slow scene.
Right. I was saying, another thing about the show is when you have expensive things, expensive CGI marine sets, you're shooting on multiple locations, you also occasionally need those two characters sit in a scene and talk because it's cheaper. You know, you got to
That's totally fine. Then why not
make
take,
it interesting?
Why not even take that scene and put it earlier in the episode?
Right, okay.
So that it's not shoved in all at the end.
So it was 6 minutes. It went from 43 minutes into the episode to 49 minutes into the episode. Boy, really killing. I thought the scene should have been building episode. If they were going to have scenes in King's Landing, mm-hmm. it should have been building tension, building our excitement, putting us on the edge of our seat for this fight. And instead, it was not an edge of on your seat fight.
It was, hey, sit back and relax. Let's get to it.
All right, so let's get to it. Enough about that terrible scene. We're 49 minutes in. Evil Uncle Tyrion brought out in chains.
Now, anybody who's listening to this podcast,
yeah.
watch the show. So I'm not spoiling anything when
no.
I say, as someone who has forgotten some of what happened in the books, and so therefore people who haven't watched the books.
They haven't read the books. I've been watching this book. It's done nothing.
What you would expect here to happen doesn't happen. And in fact, you think it happens, and then there's a turn on it. So that's why this got an extra one more grade for me.
From
a 6 to a 7.
Oh, okay.
Because of the unexpectedness of it all.
Right. Even though you knew the... Somewhere in your noggin, you knew
I knew that Tyrion... Well, but see, that's part of the problem, is I knew that Tyrion... lived,
mm-hmm.
so...
I think your short-term memory loss is why when I say things like double S...
Double S?
You always ask because you can't remember,
oh,
and you
right.
couldn't remember
you're
the
right.
end of this fight. So, okay, we're here in King's Landing. We see Oberyn, and he is cocky. He is like, I'm going to TCB, I'm going to take care of business, or TCM, take care of the mountain. And his lady's like, you've got to be kidding. You're going to fight this guy? And he's like, I'm going to kill this guy.
Yeah, and I'm going to have some little liquor first. And then we have You know what? I think the show
is
one of the faithful listeners to our podcast.
Right. The show writers do listen to our podcast.
The show writers gave a little homage to something that we do occasionally. That is, the maester starts to get into it, and Tywin essentially says, skip ahead.
All right, so let's do it right now. Let's just do it. So Grandmaster Pycelle, he comes out, and he says, in the sights of God and men, we gather to ascertain the guilt or innocence of this man, Tyrion Lannister. May the mother grant them mercy. May the father give them such justice as they deserve. May the warrior guide the
skip
hand
ahead.
Of our...
Skip ahead! Skip
ahead! And so Maester Pycelle, he's had enough. Oberyn kisses his lady. The mountain doesn't kiss his squire.
He does not. The mountain seems like he's that he's not quite as tender in his interactions with human beings.
And what did you think of Oberyn Martell's showboating here? He is like trying to get the crowd on his side.
Well,
and he does get the crowd on his side.
He does. He's just lucky the mountain didn't have a gun. That's all I'll have to say.
Right. Trial by combat with guns would be a bit simpler. But the crowd, they're cheering, even though the crowd knows what an evil imp, evil Uncle Tyrion is. But they love
They just
the
like
showman.
To see blood. And basically, Oberyn Martell pulls a Princess Bride here.
A Princess Bride?
Yeah. My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. He repeats over and over again.
Right.
Not quite that, but close to that.
He's like, you raped my sister. You murdered her. You killed her children. Say it now, and we can make this quick. He is a badass.
This is essentially the adult version of Princess Bride.
And he's doing very well. He knocks the mountain's helm off.
He's doing great.
And he is swinging in the mountain. I got to be honest, I think he's letting the mountain get close some of these times. You killed her children.
He's kind of taunting him, and then he does some sort of nice flippy flips.
Yeah, he did a Darth Maul flip there. And he is, he is showboating. The more I watch this, he'd get a 15-yard penalty for taunting. But he lets...
Right, but also I think he's going to try to get into the mountain's head.
Ooh, the mountain just kicked him, though. And this is the first sign we had that, ooh, Oberyn may be in trouble. Because there were some. Like the Oberyn split... the mountain split Oberyn's spear. And I thought, well, this is over. You can't... But he's like, give me another spear. That's part of the rules?
I mean, it's not like he's getting back up. He's just grabbing another little spear.
I did like how Jaime Lannister really enjoyed this fight.
Well, Jaime's...
Ooh, the mountain just
Jaime's
threw.
Trying to figure out how you would do this left-handed.
Ooh, and then, ooh, he stabs him, and Cersei looks a little trouble. And this is where the Oberyn Martell, the Red Viper, has been kicked. He's been thrown. But now he is... Ooh!
He gets him kind of in the calf. That's right. Not a good place.
Cersei's looking worried. Jaime's looking happy.
And now...
Ooh!
What he does
him.
Here, though, is... Also, he sort of makes an appeal, sort of a challenge to Tywin.
Oh, I love this part
yeah.
of this. I love this part of it. Now, look at Jaime's face. He's, like, really happy. Look at this. Because the mountain just spit up blood. And Jaime's looking like, screw you, Dad. And everybody's looking in trouble. And he's like, and the Oberyn's like, well, you can't die without confessing.
Yeah. Now he makes the horror movie mistake here.
Oh yeah. Amen.
You don't like either walk away from the corpse or get too close to it.
No, but he
those
is,
are the things that you do.
He's trying to get him to confess. And
he's, but he's pointing at Tywin,
he's
which
like,
I really get excited. Yes.
Who gave you the order to kill my sister and her children?
Say her name. Say what's my name? What's my name? Is it Heisenberg? You say her name, Heisenberg. And Ellaria is like, yeah. And then,
uh-oh.
Oh boy. The mountain, although horrifically injured, is still very strong.
Right.
And so he takes his big meaty hands.
Oh, meaty hands.
And basically he makes a carved pumpkin out of Oberyn Martell.
Oh my God. I want to give the mountain his due here. For a guy with not many lines, he came up with a real funny line. And that is, he says, I killed her children.
That's a funny line.
It's a good one. In your face. And then he says, Elia Martell, I killed her children.
Yeah.
Then I raped her.
Yes, this is a whole very funny bit.
Then I smashed her head in like this.
And he just pops them like a cherry.
Oh my God. That is kind of messy.
Now here's my question.
Cersei's very happy.
But he falls over, and he could be dead too. So if they're both dead, doesn't that mean that Tyrion should either go, or at least there should be a rematch?
A rematch between the two dead people? What do you mean?
No, but I mean you'd have to have two more champions. It's like if your champion lives, then I die. If my champion lives, then I die. But if they both die, it seems to me like that's a push.
The seven gods are like, we don't know.
Yeah,
exactly. We don't know who did it.
Exactly.
All
Somebody
right.
call the game master
right, hello.
And tell me what the
What's
heck going
on. What's
going
on here? Okay, so now the reason, Catfish, why you're asking all these questions is because this fight was fun, but it was slightly different from how it was in the books. And so we'll be, at the end of this podcast, we'll be reading a
Absolutely.
Tyrion POV chapter.
Please stick around for that because it's going to be far more
entertaining than
yes.
a 6-minute story about Beatles. All right, so it ends with Grandpa Joffrey, Tywin saying, Tyrion Lannister, the gods have found you, you know, made it known their will, and so you're going to die.
I guess you can't tie in a fight to the death.
No. Well, maybe who died first in your head popping like a beetle.
Yeah.
That is a first death.
I guess
the mountain could go on for a bit.
I guess maybe it doesn't matter. Your guy has to live.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyway, then we have, it
there
says
was silence.
Music playing,
no, there was silence
but there was silence.
But then halfway through these credits, they snuck in some music. And so it's hard to say. It's almost painful to say.
I like the turnaround.
Yeah.
So I give it a 7. The turnaround at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But that's very high considering there's a lot of stuff I did not like in this episode.
And I feel, folks, maybe you love this episode. We were a bit hard on it. We want you to write us and tell us your feedback of this episode. Once again, my name's Bubba. You can hit me on Twitter. @FitAndTrim. That's my Twitter handle. Write me on Twitter and tell me what you thought of this episode. My Twitter handle is @FitAndTrim. FitAndTrim. FitAndTrim. Let me know what you thought.
Wow. That's a
what's
lot
your,
of times.
What's your
My handle is @CJGman67, and you only get it once.
Right. Excellent.
So without further ado.
So my Twitter handle is
Skip ahead.
Okay, perfect. All right, so right now, everybody, if you want to read the books, go ahead and we'll catch you on the next episode. But if you've read the books, or if you don't mind finding out what happened in the book, because we're going to do the Tyrion chapter where the Viper
of the fight.
Out.
So yeah, you've already seen it on television.
You've already seen it on TV, so we don't think this is a spoiler. But it also explains why we love Joffrey so much. Because Joffrey, unlike the TV show where they're doing this little fake,
mm-hmm.
The chapter really shows Joffrey in all his greatness. And mm-hmm. why don't we get to that right now?
Let's do it.
Being very busy.
All right, Catfish, now it's time to read. We normally don't read Evil Uncle Tyrion chapters, but we're
right.
going to read this one and just get right
it's
to it.
It's usually very popular, though, when we read
very
it.
Very popular.
Joffrey.
If you have not downloaded some of our past readings of Joffrey POV chapters from the book, you really should, because it makes the books and the TV show better, because you
Absolutely.
Can finally understand what's happening. It's so confusing,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and those unreliable narrators of the other chapters,
yeah.
Joffrey chapters, are true.
That's
but
the way
now
it should
we're,
be.
But now we're going to get a slightly unreliable narrator by reading Evil Uncle Tyrion's chapter.
Yes.
Okay, so here we go. Tyrion 6 from George R. R. Martin's A Storm of Swords. The Outer Ward had been chosen for combat. Tyrion had to skip and run to keep up with Prince Oberyn's long strides. Because Tyrion was short, and in most things in life, Tyrion knew deep down in his heart that he just didn't measure up. Prince Oberyn called to his squire.
My attire, Dagos.
Prince Oberyn raised his arm so Lord Dagos Manwood he could slip the chainmail burnie down over his head. Oberyn shivered with excitement. He couldn't tell if it was from battle or from looking at Dagos, strong, supple arms, glistening with sweat, and the sun danced across his features, showing off.
Skip ahead!
This is Tyrion describing Oberyn's
Please.
Feelings. Catfish, all right, Jesus. All right, here we go. Manwoody handed him a high golden helm with copper disc mounted on the brow. It was the Son of Dorne. The visor had been removed. Prince Oberyn pulled on soft red leather gloves and yellow leather gloves. Red leather, yellow leather, red leather.
Skip ahead.
Wait, what?
I don't even think that was in there.
Catfish. Okay, all right, here we go. It looked as though 1,000 people had come to see if the imp would live or die. They lined the castle walkways and elbowed one another on the steps of the keeps and the towers. They watched from the stable doors, from windows and bridges, from balcony and roofs.
Okay, all right.
From
yeah,
gutters and
come on,
and now,
I got it, I got it. There's a lot of people
they
around.
They got on people's shoulders and watched.
Okay, yes, all right. There's people watching.
Catfish, do you even like these books? You always want me to skip ahead. All right, dear God. Okay. Next paragraph, all right. Cersei seemed half a child herself beside Sir Gregor. In his armor, the mountain looked bigger than any man had any right to be. Beneath a long yellow surcoat bearing the three black dogs of Clegane, he wore heavy plate over chainmail, dull gray steel dinted and scarred from battle. Beneath that would be boiled leather and a layer of quilting. A flat-topped great helm was bolted to his gorget with breaths around the mouth and the nose slit for vision. The crest atop it was a stone fist.
Skip ahead.
Right. In the mountain's belly.
Oh, no.
Was all the food which he'd eaten for the last 3 days. Oh. That food included goose eggs mm-hmm. mixed with peppers and olive oil.
Sure.
3 kidney pies made with non-given-up gravy. Fine arbor wine made from grapes from
sure.
the arbor,
sure.
which is an island not far from Old Town, the seat Citadel. Of the Citadel and House Hightower, who are sworn to the Rose of House Tyrell in the Reach.
Sweet Joffrey, skip ahead to the lamprey pie.
So you do remember this
section.
I'm
sure there's a lamprey pie in there.
Right here, okay. The lamprey pie had been made with fresh lamprey caught off the mouth of the Blackwater River as it flowed into the Blackwater Bay by Blackwater Rush. It had been salted for 3 days and basted in a piquant Dorne wine and charred gently in wildfire compost.
I beg of you, no more.
The lamprey had lived since
Please,
King Robert had...
Let's go to the fight.
All right. It's just straight to the fight. These chapters aren't very long if we skip everything.
It seems longer.
All right. Prince Oberyn's paramour, Ilaria Sand, paled at the sight of Sir Gregor. You're going to fight that? She said in a hushed voice.
Yes,
Oberyn replied in his husky voice.
But I haven't decided whether I'm going to defile it before or after I kill it.
You should do it before, Eliara said. And he at least deserves a reach around. The High Septon shuffled forward and prayed to the Father above to help them with this judgment. The fight began. Prince Oberyn advanced quickly. Sir Gregor advanced more ominously. The Red Viper stopped a bit away and called out.
Have they told you who I am?
Sir Gregor said through his breath.
Some dead guy?
The Dornishman slid sideways and poked with his spear.
I'm Oberyn Martell, a prince of Dorne. Princess Elia was my sister.
Gregor responded.
Who there?
Elia Martell. Princess of Dorne, you raped her, you murdered her, you killed her children.
You want to talk, or you want to fight?
I came to hear you confess.
What was it I did?
Suddenly the crowd parted, gasping and falling from its feet. Women fainted, little children cried, cats scattered for their lives. A blind man cried out,
I can see!
And walked right into Oberyn's spear, impaling himself and falling down dead. I am here, King Joffrey proclaimed. Why are you fighting my loyal subject? The mountain took one look at his magnificent, beautiful face. He started drooling incomprehensibly, while Oberyn's spear stood at full attention, even though he had not dropped his weapon. Gracious and sexy, King Joffrey called out, Prince Oberyn, you realize that if you fight and win, evil Uncle Tyrion shall live.
No entiendo. I simply wanted to avenge my sister. I care nothing over a man who simply doesn't measure up.
King Joffrey turned to address the masses. Evil Uncle Tyrion, This trial by combat is to measure you in the eyes of the Seven, and in their judgment, everyone, all together now.
He just doesn't measure up. He just doesn't measure up. He just doesn't measure up.
The crowd continued this chant for the next 47 minutes. Tyrion was despondent, and he yelled for the crowd.
For sweet baby Joffrey's sake, kill me, abuse me, throw me to the wolves. But please don't bring back the whore I've fallen in love with.
His sister, Queen Cersei, mother of His Grace King Joffrey, first of his name, questioned out,
"Evil brother Tyrion, do you mean Tysha, the whore you married, or Shay, the funny whore who testified against you?"
Tyrion burped back to her,
"No, I mean that whore Sansa of House Stark."
Suddenly out of the crowd, Sansa Stark appeared and dropped her flagon of wine.
"F you, D-bag. I'm totally doing a guy called Littlefinger, and he's still got a bigger pink mass than you."
The crowd laughed. Tyrion was despondent.
"What about all the cookies I made for you in that treehouse? What about my representative position in the Lullaby League? What about all those times I let you toss me?"
"Quiet, Tiny Tim. The adults are talking."
Joffrey, King Joffrey, stepped to his uncle. "Imp, uncle, I cannot allow this noble Dornishman to fight for your honor. Number one, you have none, and you would be sentenced to death. That's right, once you're dead, your head will be put on the shortest pole in the Red Keep."
"But, nephew, you are alive, and I was only charged with your death."
"No, evil Uncle Tyrion. I merely faked my death to find out who is doing terrible things in this city. Who were the true usurpers? That's why I kept playing dead all those days. Because as king, I had to find out the truth. And I know the truth. I charge you, evil Uncle Tyrion, today, with the maiming of several cats in this city." The crowd gasped. "The poor treatment of our noble guest, Sansa Stark, and her illiterate father, Ned Stark."
"Oh!"
"And finally, evil Uncle Tyrion, I charge you with the impaling murder of Roz the Whore, and your subsequent attempt to pin the murder on me by hanging her in my bedroom to my bed, and by putting the deadly crossbow in my hands. Sir Illyn, bring me his head." End of chapter. Holy
wow.
Smokes.
That's a bit different than what we saw tonight.
It is, and a bit more realistic.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so, you know, we may do this again. There are only two episodes left, and we may have to, maybe for that last episode, we'll read another chapter so people can see. It's probably in the last episode. That's when they'll bring Joffrey back.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll let everybody see how it really went down. Until that point, hey, once again, we were kind of down on this episode, but we want your feedback. For the last time, hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Fit and Trim.
I'm at CJGman67.
Remember, you can win our The Joffrey Podcast t-shirt by submitting an iTunes review that you've written. If you're in a country other than the United States, please let us know, because sometimes it's hard to find. But we will catch you next time on
The Joffrey of Podcasts.